welcome to episode 4 of the High Performance Platform. I'm your host, Jacob Feller, and today we welcome our special guest, Emma Checker.
My advice is always raw and honest. It's you don't become a professional athlete through it being easy. But my advice in that is it's worth every bit of hard work that goes into it. There's going to be challenges. There's going to be bumps in the road. It's not going to be smooth sailing the whole time. But that's why we choose to do it. And you're not a professional athlete unless you secretly thrive off of those moments.
This is such an amazing and inspiring episode. I'll keep this very short and just let Emma dive straight in because she's so well-spoken and her story is truly inspirational. Whether it be, you know, a young aspiring footballer to become the next Matilda or someone who's just looking to maximize your daily routines and enhance, you know, the positive things and enjoyment in life.
Well, I'm Emma Checker, obviously, as you will know now. I'm a professional soccer player and I've been fortunate enough to be playing professionally since I was 15 years old. I grew up in Adelaide and I really loved my time growing up there, and for my career I was really fortunate to be exposed to so many incredible opportunities from such a young age. And you know, it was hard being in a smaller city with such a big sport and obviously not having quite the same exposure as your Victorias and your New South Wales and all of those things. But it was just, I believe that my upbringing into sport was just unbelievable. And I was so fortunate. I had so many incredible opportunities. And my first W League contract, where it all began, was at home in Adelaide when I was 15. And it all just started to stem from there. And I didn't grow up in a soccer family. I didn't have parents or older siblings or anyone for that matter that had taken the pathway of being a soccer player. So it was something different. And I think I secretly loved that because I did grow up in a sporting family. My dad had always been involved in AFL with the umpires as a strength and conditioning coach and a number of other sports, and my mum was sporty as well with netball and a number of other sports. And I think there was something about, you know, taking my own path and choosing my own sport that was different to them that was appealing and gave me a little bit of a competitive mindset around that. And it came together really fast. I grew up mainly as a track and field athlete and kind of got into soccer just through playing with the boys at school, as typical as that sounds. And it wasn't until I was 11 that I actually signed at a club. So my journey as a soccer player probably started later than most do these days. I mean, most are exposed to it very young. And whilst I did play at school before I was 11, I didn't get into it competitively until then. And it obviously, you know, if you think about it from 11 to 15, it's only 4 years. So it's a pretty rapid period of time. And it is really nice to sit back sometimes and reflect on it because it happens so fast when you're so young, and you naturally don't appreciate it for what it is when you're that young because you don't really understand the full magnitude of what you're doing at that point. And I just am so grateful because I had so many unbelievable coaches throughout that time. And, you know, my family were amazing as well, because a lot of it can actually be quite overwhelming when you're that age and, you know, increasing, climbing up the ranks at that age. And so when I was 15, I got that opportunity. And from there, I went into the under 17 national team after having a really good tournament at the under 15 nationals. And it just all started to flow, and it was really smooth. And it's, you know, obviously that's what you want. It was smooth sailing. Success was coming. I was, you know, playing full games in the W League at 15 and in and out of camps. And I had my first senior Matildas camp not long after that. When I was 16, I made my debut. So things happened really mighty fast. And now obviously there's a lot of years between 16 and 24 now, but it's definitely taken a roller coaster, some backflips and spins and turns since then. But I think that's also been just as much of an exciting part of the journey as those early days were. And here I am sitting in France and speaking with you, Jacob.
And nice and early there as well, yeah?
Yeah, look, what better way to start my day? Wouldn't have it any other way.
And we thank you so much for spending this time with us to jump on. It's really fascinating. We've got you on the other side of the world. You're in France, and obviously to hear your backstory, and you and I have done some work together. You know, we'll get to that. We'll talk about the preseason, the off season training and stuff. But hearing your story, even from now, 15 years of age, first game. You know, that's huge. Is that a record? Is that the youngest player, or back then it was the youngest player to play W League? Is that correct?
Yeah, you have to be 15 to play in the league. So I would say someone might have beaten me by a few months, but it's up there with being pretty close to it.
Yeah, it's just crazy to think of that age, and then everything snowballing quite quickly, and by 17 playing for your country.
Yeah, I was 16 when I made my debut, which was pretty crazy.
16, sorry, even more crazy. Yeah, phenomenal stuff. Talk to me, Emma. Let's stay in that moment if we can. Your debut, can you share with us? You know, we've got a broad audience of young footballers, especially young, female soccer players trying to progress and make it to getting their debut for their country. Can you talk to us about what that meant for you and how that felt?
Oh, that day was something special. I think, I actually think it feels, the older I get, the more special it becomes. And like what I touched on just before, it's when you're that young, there's an element of it that you can't appreciate in the way that you do once you're older and can look back and, really focus on just how incredible that moment is. And even though I'm not that old, but when I was 16, women's football was actually very different to what it is now. And the hype around the Matildas wasn't the same. And we were still in that massive phase of growth. And it was a really exciting time. And there's been a number of coaches since then. And so Tom Samani was the coach at the time to give me my debut and the opportunity. And we were in China. It was against Hong Kong, and he put me in the starting lineup, and I played 90 minutes, and it was, I don't think there's any words to explain the feeling of walking out onto the pitch. And for me, the most special part of it was singing the national anthem, and it just sent goosebumps through my whole body, up my spine. And it's just, I was so proud. And for me, it was, I was standing up there, in the lineup singing the anthem, not just proud of myself, but proud to be representing where I'd come from, everyone that had got me there. And it was just a journey. And while it had happened very quickly, and like I said, I had a very rapid journey to that point when I was younger, there was still so much that went into it, so much hard work, so much of I was juggling, I was a kid, I was juggling school, juggling dealing with all the sacrifices that go with being a professional athlete playing for your national team while I'm still doing high school and being away from my family. And it's a lot to deal with as a young person. But at the same time, I felt like I did a really good job at making it work, and that's why it happened. And it wasn't just me, it was everyone around me. So in that moment standing there, it's just, I was just filled with joy and pride, and I was nervous. I don't think I've ever been so nervous in my life, to be honest. But again, it's in that moment, you get your first touch on the ball and things just go well from there. And it was a good game. I was fortunate to be part of a win, and it was something I will never forget. Yeah, that game. And I think it's something that you hold really close to you forever.
Absolutely. And that's, just hearing that passion come through through the speakers here. It's a huge, huge thing. And, for us to be able to visualize that, Emma, it's really special. So, yeah, thank you for sharing. Progressing from then, talk to us about what comes next and sort of where your career took you.
Yeah, things after that were, again, they were pretty smooth sailing for probably a year or so after that. I spent two seasons playing at Adelaide United, and then my coach from Adelaide United signed with Melbourne Victory, and it felt like the right time for me to challenge myself with something new. And I'd just finished, well, I actually hadn't quite finished high school, but I was about to finish high school, and I really wanted to take my career to the next step. And it was, it was young to be having those thoughts of moving away and doing something different. And I was, I was comfortable in Adelaide. I was playing 90 minutes week in, week out. So moving to Melbourne you know, challenge that. And I decided that it was the right challenge for me and it was the right thing for my career to expose myself to something different. So when I was 17, I signed with Melbourne Victory and moved to Melbourne. And I didn't know a lot of people there, but the familiarity of having the same coach that I did with my second season at Adelaide United really helped with that. And, you know, I was welcomed in with open arms. It was a really competitive bunch and it was just a phenomenal season. I was challenged every day, lifestyle-wise, adjusting to a new norm, you know, being by myself, cooking for myself, cleaning for myself. It was a massive year of growth for a 17-year-old and I was juggling that with still being in and out of camps, and we had huge success that season. We won the championship and it just turned out to be such an incredible move. And not that success defines it being the right move, but it was just, you know, it topped it off and it made it something really special to experience. And that group was a really special group of girls. And I look at who I was fortunate enough to play with in that team, and most of them are, you know, playing in England now or in the national team or in their overseas national team. So it was, we had some really big players in there that I learned a lot off of, and I'm really glad I made that hard decision to move. And it wasn't easy, obviously, being away from home that young. And since then, I've only been back for a few months here and there. And it was the defining decision to make the move and, you know, pick up and be away.
Can we touch on coaches? So you mentioned a few things there, you know, what makes this coach good or importance of that coach and gravitation towards following this particular coach in general. What makes a good coach for you, Emma?
I think there's a number of core things that are really important to me. And I think a coach that can not only be a good coach and intelligent on the field, but one that treats you like a human being. And I know that sounds like such a basic thing, but I think it's really important. I know for me that I thrive in an environment where I'm treated like a person and not a thing. And it sounds like something that should just happen naturally, but it doesn't. And that's a really, you know, valuable part of being in a team that's successful and integrated and works for each other, is when you can feel that mutual respect of being, you know, people to working towards one end goal. And it doesn't mean, you know, same with your teammates. It's not about having a friendship with your coach. It's not that at all. It's just a mutual respect. And I think the ability to treat players as equally as possible. And I say as possible because, again, we're humans. We're naturally, you know, we gravitate towards certain people. And I understand there's an element of that. But yeah, making decisions based on merit and also just having the ability to absolutely bring the best out of a player and a person. And I know you and I have spoken a lot about this. It's not one size fits all. And as much as you can be working towards one end goal, and obviously that's a part of team sport, there's also a big individual aspect to making that work. And I think we misunderstand team sport sometimes in the sense that we only hear team, and yes, we only hear team when we're on the field and when we're seeing the team succeed and, you know, things don't go well, all of those things. But what makes that team is when every individual is at their best. And so for me, that's my biggest one, is a coach that can actually recognize that every individual within their team is different. They're going to have different needs. They're going to respond differently. They need different types of feedback. They may even need different kinds of training techniques used for them, but that's okay. And I think the other part of that is creating a team environment. Like, and this is, you know, the coach has the main power to do this, but is creating a team environment where players also accept that different players need different things. Because once everyone understands that, there's a massive element of respect and understanding around the group. And that, you know, for me, that creates success. And that is then making the team the best team that they can be. If every individual in that team is at their best and having the best brought out of them.
I think I'm just going to, you know, use that snippet and we'll roll that out as, you know, this podcast intro. That's so well said and well spoken. Couldn't agree with you more. You know, it stems back to the communication and the education. And yes, we look at a team sport, but that team, especially on a football pitch, is 11 individuals. Yeah. You know, 10 outfield players, one goalkeeper. How do we get the team to function at its best? Well, in my eyes, as an individual performance coach or specialist, it's getting each one of those people and players to perform to their optimum. You know, everyone has different cognitive anchors. People use different types of fuel to get themselves up for the game, to focus, to concentrate. Everyone's body's different. People have discrepancies, dysfunction. You know, there's a world of the science versus the art to uplift each individual, which in turn, you know, it improves the team as a whole. So yeah, it's just fascinating to hear from obviously a player of your caliber and with your experience to know what works for you from a coaching perspective. Yeah, fascinating.
Yeah, and I think the other thing with that is when you look at it within a professional team, it goes beyond, you know, the way that the best is brought out of a person on the field. We're talking about essentially traveling around the world, traveling interstate, you know, having itineraries that it's hard to plan for that many individuals to please them all. And I think it comes down again to players need to be flexible, you know, and I think so does the coach. Things aren't always going to go to plan, but if it doesn't work, how can we make that better so that it's the best possible way for everyone? And I know for, you know, again, for me, the teams that are most enjoyable to be a part of is when you are traveling and things flow and things work and the coach is bouncing off you based on what's best, and everyone's different. You know, one team might like really loud music in the change room, and or another one might like silence, and individuals might like certain things. And just the coach being able to kind of sit back and almost be a passenger to those things happening, knowing that the players know what's best for them in those moments is also important. I think there's, you know, the coach in every way deserves the right to have control over so many things, but I think it's also giving the players the ownership and trusting them enough to have the ownership in the little things like that as well, around their routines on game day and just the way that they prepare.
Couldn't agree more. For some, that might be massive, and I presume it is. Look, to hear your perspective, it is huge, Emma. It's a really great insight, you know, factual, real-world information. And going back a few sentences, you know, talking about people are humans first and the athletes second, respecting that, especially high-caliber professional athletes in a professional team setting, allowing that freedom, allowing you guys to work out what's necessary and, you know, to do those things. Yeah, I think it's spot on. Progressing through some of these questions, talked about your first pro contract, first national appearance. What do you love most about the game?
Good question. There's so many things that come to mind, but I just love being challenged. And I love being a part of a team. They're my two short answers, and I'll branch out on those. For me, it's, I'm physically and mentally tested and pushed every day. And I love the feeling that football brings to me, and the feeling of being on the training field, the feeling of, you know, playing a game, even the feeling of sitting in with your teammates in a team meeting working towards one goal. It's just, for me, the team aspect is really special, and it's, you win together, you lose together, you grow together, you fall together. It's everything. And that's where the team part is so important. And I love that part of it. And the reason I use the word challenge is because I love the challenge of making that work. It's not an easy thing to bring so many different individuals together and work towards an end goal like that. And I understand that it's the same in most industries where you are bringing a team together, but for me, there was something about football that felt right, and that was, you know, why it became my sport of choice. And I love the physical component, I love the mental component, and I love the game. You know, it's the world game. It's not the world game for no reason. It's an exciting sport, and for me, being a part of women's football in particular at a time of such massive growth is something really exciting, and I spend every day proud to be a part of it because I, you know, like I said, I'm young still, and I've got plenty of my career left, but the growth that I have been a part of and experienced since playing is massive. And I honestly am still surprised sometimes to look back and see just how far we've come, because it's phenomenal. And I think the other big thing that I love about football is I love winning. And I think you're not a professional athlete unless you love winning. I hate losing, but, you know, that's also part of it, but I won't even go into that because I just love winning and I love being a part of something that I can work towards winning, and with one united goal with my teammates. For me, that's really special.
Makes perfect sense. You know, we play to compete, especially at your level. Most definitely. Can you talk to us about the differences then? It's popped up a few times, so obviously talking possibly when you first started compared to now, I presume there's been a heap of different shifts and changes. But, you know, more predominantly over the last sort of 12 to 24 months, the Matildas and women's football, it's really, really exciting in that space. Can you share some insight towards that?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, when I look at the Matildas from when I made my debut, and even as a kid when I was, you know, watching and aspiring to be a Matilda, to now, it's just, you know, the awareness of the Matildas has just grown massively. You know, it's gone from, you'd have a conversation with someone about women's football and they may not have actually known about the Matildas, to now it's this big brand and it's known and it's exciting, and there's a really, you know, positive, people's mindset around hearing the Matildas is positive and exciting. And, you know, we've had a lot of success as a national team over the last few years. And I think women's football is in the best possible place it's ever been. And obviously I'm removing, you know, the current COVID circumstances in saying this, but we've just secured a home World Cup. Like that is huge. And
doesn't get much better, does it?
I don't know if, you know, I think the thing with that is you don't even have to like football to understand the magnitude of an event like that. And it's just knowing that we've come from a place of, you know, not even necessarily being recognised or known to people to having the backing of a country in hosting a World Cup is just phenomenal. And I'm like getting goosebumps talking about it, because the thought of playing on home soil for a World Cup, that is the pinnacle. It doesn't actually get better than that. And for me, being able to play through this journey of the build up to that, and also knowing the hard work that went into making that happen, it's those decisions and, you know, being chosen to have a home World Cup, you don't just get chosen. There were years of work that went into that. And just knowing the behind the scenes efforts that did go into making that happen I'm proud to play in a sport that back, you know, our country and our sport to hosting such a big event, because it is hard and it's not all the colour and light that you see on TV. There's a lot of things that go wrong in making it happen, and it's tough and it's challenging. But again, I said I like challenging things, and I'm proud to be a part of, you know, a sport and a country that are willing to make a challenging step for the sport.
And striving for it, most definitely. It's phenomenal, especially to see, you know, through social media and the marketing and all of the spotlight and the attention that, you know, and the traction that that we're building for the Matildas. I think it's super, super important. And, you know, we work with a population of young aspiring footballers, young female players, and just the excitement that these young kids are getting from all of the noise and the things that, you know, rightfully so and so well deserved that are happening now, especially pushing towards the World Cup coming here. It's just phenomenal. So I think the next, 3 years are going to be huge. You know, great building blocks, a lot of excitement, a lot of progressions towards something extraordinary.
Yeah, and I think in adding to that, like you mentioned, the young girls coming through, and I think for me that is one of the most exciting areas of progress that have been made, is the pathways have changed. You know, the pathway is clearer, I will go back in saying we've got a lot of work to do in our pathways to the national teams, but I mean, look at what young girls can actually aspire to be now. And gone are the days where it's, you know, being an athlete isn't really a career path, you know, for women in football. It's, you can be a full-time professional female footballer now in Australia. And that's incredible. That didn't even exist when I first started, let alone, you know, for everyone else before me. So the way that women's football has grown and the way that it is growing is massive. And obviously there's going to, you know, there's still ups and downs, and especially with COVID, what we're experiencing is difficult and tough for the league at home. But as a whole, things are in a really good place, and it's exciting for kids coming through, because I think, you know, I just picture a young girl having a conversation with her, you know, her parents about wanting to be a professional footballer or a Matilda. And I just think the stigma around it has changed. And I think the response that you would get from saying that now is different, because we've seen what that can look like. And we've, you know, we've seen the way that your life can be lived as a professional athlete. It's no longer just a side job. It's everything now. And I think that's unbelievable that young girls can come through knowing that they can be a part of something so special.
And just to give a little shout out, there's a nice segue here to the younger audience listening, to aspiring to be, you know, the next Emma Checker or the next national player, Matilda, next big thing, W League, anywhere, any progression that a young soccer player has. You know, what's some advice, Emma, that you could lend to them?
My fallback is always that it's going to be hard. My advice is always raw and honest. It's, you don't become a professional athlete through it being easy. But my advice in that is it's worth every bit of hard work that goes into it. And there's going to be challenges. There's going to be bumps in the road. It's not going to be smooth sailing the whole time, but that's why we choose to do it. And you're not a professional athlete unless you secretly thrive off of those moments. And for me, for the, you know, for those young ones coming through, it may, your pathway is going to be different to everyone else. You know, don't look at the person next to you. Don't focus on what time in their career they, you know, achieve things, because everyone's journey is different. Everyone, you know, develops as a human being differently, mentally and physically. And your journey is not meant to be the same as everyone around you. And if the person next to you is 15, like I was playing W League, and you're 20 and you're still not, it's not over. It is different for everyone. The journey is not one size fits all. And I really truly believe that if it is meant to be for you and you do everything in your control, that it will be. But like I said, you do have to do everything you can, because no one is going to do it for you. And you can be fortunate and it can happen when you're young, but you, sometimes it might take longer. And I say that because even though it did happen for me young, since then I definitely experienced massive times of adversity, and I have only played 5 games in the national team, even though I debuted when I was 16. So it's not always an easy ride. And for those young, you know, for those young girls, I just would say stick at it, because if that's what you want, then it is worth it. And don't focus on those around you. Focus on yourself, because when you do everything that you can, that's when you're going to achieve the most.
Such an important message. I like how you kept referencing professional athlete. So a lot of hot topics and discussions in you know, sports science, exercise science, strength and conditioning in the football world is, obviously we just watch a Champions League and, you know, Bayern Munich and all of these well-built athletes. And it seems that everyone's sort of had a light bulb moment or an aha moment towards, you know, physical stature and athleticism. And regardless of male or female, we're just talking in the football world, soccer world. And you have to become to be a professional athlete or a professional soccer player, you have to be an athlete as well. And the physical demands in order to get there are huge. And just for all the audience and people listening, Emma's the, and no disrespect to anybody else, I'm sorry, but Emma is the hardest working, most athletic player that I've actually had the privilege to work with. So even for me as a coach, this might be a good place to chime this in, Emma. Even as a coach, you know, when I first started working with you, I was like, shit, this athlete, this player, this human being is incredible in terms of physical output. So I had to sort of, you know, reflect on my own coaching styles. I was like, okay, let's do this, let's do that. So in working with you, I actually learned a lot. So I'm very, very grateful for the opportunities to be able to, you know, when I first met you and the training program we did, and even working with you now through some online stuff. It's good because I've had to challenge my learning and my deliverance to suit you as an individual. So athleticism, incredible. For those listening, for any aspiring, you know, young footballers, you've got to put in the work. Don't compare yourself to others, everything Emma just said. And, you know, if you work hard every day, you do the best that you can do, I'm sure it'll get you there. And if it doesn't, then at least you can, you know, have peace of mind and no regrets. Absolutely.
Oh, thank you, Jacob. Very humbled.
A long-winded compliment, that one, wasn't it? But
yeah, I appreciate it.
Seriously, though, yeah, phenomenal. And professional athletes, you've got to work hard. You've got to do the right thing. Strength work, look after your bodies, recovery, nutrition. There's a whole world, and it seems so easy, but it's it's the most complex.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's, you can hear all of those words and think that they'll, you know, naturally come into place, but they, you know, you do stuff it up along the way. It's trial and error until you find what works for you. And again, it comes back to what we were saying, that it's not one size fits all, physically, mentally, all of those things, everyone's different. So it's just about, you know, taking it upon yourself to actually work out what does work best for you and not just going by the books. And I think that's been the biggest one for me, is working out that I am my own unique individual, and I love being unique. I think I am a different kind of breed, and I own it. And I think for me, working out how my, you know, my individual being can be at its best through all of those things.
Might be a great question to ask. I know you've had some new leveling up experiences in terms of that, in terms of your own individual output and performance. Would you mind, if you'd like to share with our audience what you've been working on currently?
Yeah, absolutely. For me, it's funny. I think it's sometimes not until you go away and you're in a new environment that you have these big moments of realization, and maybe it comes down to I've got more time or who knows what, but I just have been in a big phase of growth since I've been in France, and an overwhelming one, to be honest, because for me, I've always been a fighter. I've always been, you know, strong. I've seen myself as resilient, and I've always been a real go-getter, but I've always had something in me that just feels a little bit different. And you know, I've always been told that I'm highly emotional and my emotions get the best of me in sport, and you know, you need to learn to deal with your emotions or don't be so sensitive. And I'm like, at the time when those things are said, I'm like, oh, you know what, I need to pull myself together. I'm being over the top, I'm, you know, showing too much emotion. And it worked both ways. It was when I was on a high and when I was on a low. So I just never thought anything of it. And it wasn't until I got here that I just had a moment of realizing maybe there's more to this. And my realization came to, I actually noticed just sensitivity in the way that I was dealing with my outside life rather than actually my football life. And I ended up searching on Spotify podcasts about sensitive people, because I had jokingly said to my partner that day, I actually think I'm really sensitive. And then laughed, but I reflected on that comment and realized, no, I actually am. And it had a weird stigma attached to it when I first was speaking about it within myself, because there is, you know, it's sense, being sensitive can be interpreted in so many ways. And I spent over 3 hours that day listening to podcasts, learning about a highly sensitive person. And I was like, okay, everything that's being said is me. And it was just, yeah, I just had to sit there and laugh and be like, my whole being makes sense now. And I realized in that moment that I can actually be a better athlete now that I know this. And I realized, yeah, I am emotional and I do experience extreme highs and I also experience extreme lows. And I swing on a pendulum probably a lot more than your average person. I respond to stigma differently and I'm very highly sensory. And how can I, as an athlete, use that to my strength? And I just decided in that moment that while I am here, while I have more time and I don't have the hustle of the busyness of life when I'm at home, it's my mission to use this as my strength. And I have got a long way to go on this journey. This is, you know, something new for me still, but I needed more help than just myself, and I needed more help than just what the internet had, you know, had to deliver. And so I speak to someone once a week now, a highly sensitive person psychologist, in learning ways to bring that out of me as a strength. And the reason, you know, I'm very open in speaking about this, because I'm a strong individual, and I'm not sharing this because of weakness. I'm sharing it because it shows strength. And I know that I'm showing strength in reaching out and getting that guidance because I'm taking it upon myself to learn more about myself and utilize that as a strength. And you know what? In the past, it has been a weakness of mine because I haven't known how to use it. And I also didn't even know it about myself until now. So when I own it, I am very sensitive, and that doesn't mean sensitive to criticism. It's not about that. It actually goes to greater depth than that. But I'm sensitive to change, to my environment, you know, to noises, to smells, all just so many little things that other people around me actually don't notice, because it is only 20% of us that are sensitive. And I've always wondered why in a team there is something about me that feels different. And it just all came together when I realized this. And for me, this is probably the biggest time of growth I've ever experienced as an athlete and as a human being, because I can feel this growth really benefiting me in life in so many ways. It's benefiting my football career. It's, you know, it's benefiting myself. It's benefiting my relationship. It's everything. And my big message in this is, it's not a sign of weakness to reach out and find that added help, because you are only bettering yourself in doing that. And there's nothing weak about being different, and there's nothing weak about owning it, because I look at it and I'm like, well, if I'm the only sensitive person in a team, watch me use that as my strength. Because yeah, it's hard for me. I respond differently in ways that are very difficult sometimes for myself and even for those around me. But it's, you know, we've all got something, and we need to bring these to the table, because like we've spoken about this, you know, throughout this whole chat, it is a team, but it's individuals within that team. And I am now seeing this as one of my individual strengths, and I will bring that into a team and I will own it. And I refuse to let it be a weakness, because it doesn't need to be. And I think, yeah, I just, a big message to everyone in that is just, whatever your difference or uniqueness is, you know, use it as a strength, because we're meant to be different. And even though you're in a team, you don't need to be the same as every other teammate, because then you're not actually bringing yourself to the team.
I think that's a really powerful message and special. Thanks for sharing. You know, vulnerability is a superpower in my eyes. You know, like it is the strength. Strong is not sharing, not being, you know, real, honest, open, those types of things. So I think it's a really powerful message. And when we first spoke about it, I couldn't wait to ask you about it and get it recorded, because it is special and it is growth for you. And, you know, being adaptable and creative and progressing, it's, you know, we're all in this lifelong trajectory of our own path. And the more you can figure out about yourself, the more cool things you can do with that to use to your advantage or to in performance, to whatever it might be, it's phenomenal.
Yeah. And it's, you know, it's the other part of it is realizing that not everyone is going to understand. Like for me, if I was to have a conversation with everyone in my team about this trait within myself, they might not understand, but that's actually okay. They don't need to understand, because they're not experiencing it within themselves. All I owe to them is that I use that to the best possible strength I can so that it benefits the team. And it's just, yeah, it's really important. I think that we can all bring a lot more to the table when we start to recognize these things within ourselves and be vulnerable. It's a big word, and it's definitely taken me time, but I really love that word, because I think, you know, you grow when you're vulnerable. You don't grow when you're not. It's a time when you do experience the most development.
Could not agree more. And there's so many sayings on that, you know, nice little references and cool little things that you see pop up from time to time. And, you know, if you remain the same, if you do the same things, you remain the same. So in order to challenge yourself to level up, to become something greater, you've got to be vulnerable. We've got to open up. Yeah. Thanks for sharing.
And just being brave. I think it also comes down to just being true to yourself.
Moving into daily routines, I'm busting to be able to learn, you know, some of your daily routine. I know you've got some great, you know, wake up routines and sleep routines. Can you share with everyone listening, you know, what does a day look like for you upon wake up, and how do you progress through the day, and what do you do to, you know, wind down as well?
Yeah, my routine has definitely evolved probably a lot over the last 12 months, actually. I have always been a massive routine person. I'm organized. I like things done in certain ways. And look, just not always saying it's worked out perfectly for me. I am a little bit OCD, perfectionist, all of those things. I like things done in a way that's comfortable for me. And a lot of that comes down to starting my day essentially in the same way every day. Like I wake up often at exactly the same time. For example, at the moment I'm waking up at 6 o'clock every day. I meditate every morning for 20 minutes before doing anything else. And I actually eat exactly the same breakfast every day, which is outrageous, but it works for me. And so before we've spoken today, I've woken up and done both of those things and always have a coffee. And that's my little start to the day, is my meditation, my breakfast and my coffee. And they're just, that's the cluster that gets me going ready before training is in the morning here at the moment. So that's, you know, that's what I do pre-training. And on that as well, and this is credit to you actually, I foot roll and foam roll before every single training session now. And that's actually a part of my morning routine here before morning training. And just, you know, at the start, I actually found it surprisingly difficult to add foam rolling and into being part of my pre-training routine, because when you haven't done something for so long, even though it doesn't take long, it's still, for me, for someone that does things the same all the time, it was change. But I, once it's been integrated in and I've recognized the benefits of it, I will never train again and not foam roll and release my feet first. Just the benefit of the way that my body feels from doing that is unbelievable. And I give you full credit for that, because I trusted in your process and it really did work. And so for me, yeah, that's my morning routine.
Before you progress, can we touch on a few things, just because how you start the day is everything, yeah? How we wake up, how we set ourselves up, and what we do to kickstart, you know, that really irons out or sets up the rest of the day. So I think it's super, super important. Quick one, meditation. Is there a style or type that you focus on? Is it guided meditations? Is it transcendental meditation? You know, what sort of style do you follow?
Yeah, so my partner's meditated for years and did a course a while ago, and she would always meditate in the morning when I was first with her, and I didn't really understand it, to be honest. And this is giving you my meditation journey essentially. I was having problems being present, and particularly in football and in my decision making on the field. And I said to her one day that I felt like one of my weaknesses and one of the reasons that I struggled to be consistent actually within the national team was I struggled with being calm in the moment, present, and making the right decision. And her first response was, okay, you need to meditate. And in my first thought was, really? Like, that's going to help me make the right decision when I'm playing for the Matildas? And you know, I saw the way that it benefited her life, and I realized, you know what, it doesn't matter if she's a lawyer, I'm an athlete, she's using that skill to make really big decisions in her day, and why can't that work for me? And she booked me in to do a course with an incredible lady called Laura Poole, and I did a 3-day meditation course there, and it's just, it really is life-changing. And I've experienced highs and lows within my meditation. I was in a really good routine before I came to France of consistently meditating every day. And I actually got here and my routine broke, and I didn't meditate for a while. And I started feeling frustrated within my meditation because it had taken a turning point, and it's not guided. So it's a 20-minute meditation and you've got your own mantra and you're just, you know, you're really sitting there within your thoughts. And I started with all the change that I experienced over here. I actually couldn't handle sitting within my own thoughts for 20 minutes every morning because I was I had so many moving parts, so many things to adjust to. And I'm, so, again, my high sensory was just at a whole new level. And it was really hard for me to continue with practicing meditation. And it was about a month ago now I got back into it, and I just have been reminded of how incredible it really is. And just understanding that, again, meditation is, your experience is different. Everyone's experience is different. It's not, you know, I experience times where I'm super deep in thought, even while I'm trying to be open and clear with space in my mind. And, but it's just allowing yourself to be present in whatever is happening in that moment. And for me, it's been a really valuable tool, because I won't even notice that it's been of value sometimes, because it just naturally becomes part of my day. And that's been a big lesson for me, is learning to be more present in life. And with my high sensitivity, I can often, you know, be too focused on things that have already happened or what's to come, when the reality is everything is about now, and the past was just a previous now, and the future is now to come. So if I focus on, you know, living like that a little more, and meditation has really helped me with that. And I can't actually take the credit of going and doing that off of my own back. My partner was amazing in helping guide me towards that journey. And it's one that's been really valuable for my career.
I couldn't agree more. And it sounds like that's transcendental. Your form with the mantra and stuff is transcendental. It's what it's labeled as, meditation, where it's not guided. You have your own mantra that works for you, and you do the course. And it's something I'm actually looking forward to once COVID restrictions are lifted. I'm going to do my own course, because at the moment I just do guided meditations. Wind back the clock 4 years ago, I actually struggled to be present. And there's a few different styles of meditating. So if anyone listening, if you're not into meditation, or if you've tried and you think, oh, this doesn't work for me, like, perhaps it doesn't, but it might be that particular style. So there's obviously mindfulness. There's, you know, focusing on things. There's focusing on nothing. There's different forms. And obviously different forms work for different people. But, you know, progressing along the meditation, and the better you get at it, it is phenomenal. And sometimes, like you said, you don't realize the changes that it's actually instilling, or the behaviors that it's creating, but by being more mindfulness or more aware or more still, those daily things that might set you off or upset you become nothing. Yeah. Cause you are focusing on the now. There's no distraction and external noise. So it's really, really special stuff. Progressing on. So daily routine, I interrupted you there with meditation. Sorry. You've had your coffee, you're ready to go, you're at training. What does the rest of the day look like? And we'll go back, we'll talk about the move to France. It's an important one. But you're here now, so let's talk about the rest of the day, if that's okay.
Yeah, so for me, I mean, most days are very similar in the sense an average day here looks like field training in the morning and gym in the afternoon. So in terms of my eating routine, it's pretty consistent as well. And I think my eating is another massive one that is unique to me and has taken me a long time to, you know, to work out what's best. And I am vegan, and I have been for just over a year now. And for me, it just works unbelievably well. And it took me some time to work out how best to, you know, to utilize a plant-based diet and being vegan and all of those things. But I just eat in a way that I feel fueled like I never have before. And, you know, I feel strong. I feel my aerobic capacity feels different. And obviously that comes down, I'm not saying that if you become a vegan, you're going to be fitter. It's not about that. But once I've combined all of these changes, it's really benefited, you know, my career and my ability to live in the way that I do. And so for me, I eat pretty consistently every day. I'm aware of what I eat, but I don't, you know, I don't follow recipes. I count my calories in times where it's important, just to double check that I am getting what I need. And, you know, through my work with you guys, just ensuring that my nutrition is on track. But in general, I have reached a point where I feel confident in saying that I can just know that my body is getting what it needs. And I'll always finish training, come home, eat, you know, then go to the gym again. And it's just about making sure that I'm fueling in between all of those things. And again, it's not, it's not one size fits all. And I'm not saying everyone go and be a vegan, but it's, yeah, it's making sure that my protein intake, my carbohydrate intake, all of those things are done in a way that suits me post-training, before training. And yeah, once I move away from the food component and back, almost back to the meditation kind of thing, it's, and I get, this one's credit to you. I've tried to incorporate breath work into most days now, and I tend to start my day with meditation and finish my day with breath work. And I don't do breath work every single day of the week, but I would say that I do it at least three times. And it's, yeah, I try a number of different routines. And again, credit to you in helping me with those, because for me, it's almost like starting and closing the day in a really grounded and present manner. And I think sometimes for me, I'm not at the point where I can be present in every part of my day and every part of my routine. So if I can kind of come back to that point once I've finished my training for the day, it's just a nice close, and it gives me the chance to then reflect on what's gone well and, you know, all of those things. And in closing to my day, my sleep patterns are massive for me. I, like I said, wake up at pretty much the same time every day, and I try to go to sleep at the same time every night. I put my phone on flight mode every night before bed, which is another big one for me. I will never go to sleep with my phone on, and I understand that people will have their opinions on what if there's an emergency and all of those things, but this is my way and it works for me. And by 10 o'clock every night, I am, you know, I'm in bed, I'm completely unwired and all devices are off. And, you know, with the time difference here, it can be really challenging to do that, because it's once, you know, everyone at home starts to wake up at that kind of time of night for me. And especially when I'm trying to connect with my partner and family at home, that could be the perfect time to be speaking once they're starting their day. But it's been really important for me, and they're supportive of me doing this, in knowing that that time is that's the cutoff time, that's the shutoff time, because otherwise I don't get 8 hours sleep. And so the 8 hours is really important to me, and I really notice within myself when that changes and I don't get it.
And like you said, the sleep, you know, the individualism of that sleep routine or sleep hygiene, for better words, is super important. Figuring out what works for you. Some people thrive off 6 hours. Some people thrive off 9. You know, young children, growing children might need longer, 9, 10 hours sleep. You know, young growing bodies. It all comes down and stems down to that individual, you know, what works for you. I think a sleep routine is super, super crucial and very undervalued. You know, we look at blue light blockers. It's become a bit of a theme and a trend now. We've got all the fancy glasses, but this stuff's been around for years, yeah? We wind the clock back when I was first learning about, you know, brain thought process, cortisol levels of an evening or end of a day, especially after training, everything spiked. Yeah. Everything switched on, and you come home from football training, you're going crazy. Yeah. So in order to down-regulate, you need to put some systems and some processes in place. Breath work is probably one of the easiest forms. You know, having a dinner, having a shower, relaxing, engaging in some breath work, turning the blue screen off, so no TV, no phones. I also do flight mode. I don't like to be interrupted in my sleep. If I get less than 8 hours, I'm an absolute monster. it all works. It's all very, very healthy and very important. So if you're not doing these things, if you are listening, I highly recommend starting. I mean, don't listen to me, listen to Emma, and you know, follow suit.
Yeah, I mean, it's even just little things, like I use night mode on my phone, so that at 7 p.m. every night, I'm still on my phone, don't get me wrong, I'm not perfect. I don't then entirely shut off from social media and all of those things, but it's just another little thing that you can control. And so my phone goes on night mode at 7 p.m. and it stays on that until 7 a.m. so that I don't actually wake up and have a big bright light in my face. And so I think it's just all the little things. And look, we're not perfect and everyone's different, and it's not about one size fits all. But for me, those things do work. And like you said, God, if I don't have 8 hours sleep, things are not looking good. So it's just knowing yourself and really valuing, you know, making sure that you do those little things to the best of your ability.
Quick question for you. Cold water immersion. We did the Wim Hof for a bit in terms of your program. How did you find it? Do you recommend it? And it doesn't have to be the Wim Hof as such, because there's no endorsements here, but just cold water, cold showers, cold immersion.
I loved it, to be honest with you. I Had heard a lot about it, but never hadn't ever tried it. And the 20-day shower challenge with the cold water was, I found it unbelievable. I woke up and felt very different to what I would normally feel. And the one thing I will say is that I think I would struggle doing it in the middle of winter, and that's just a barrier within myself that maybe I just need to try and break through. But I was fortunate to do it while it was summer over here, and I loved the feeling that it gave my body. I felt awake and alive in a different way to normal, and I still meditated before doing that, so it actually felt like just an unbelievable combination to start my day. And like I said, I think energetically I felt really different and awake and alert. So I do recommend it, and I am putting it out there as a challenge to myself, actually, but this will keep me accountable to try and do it also in the cooler months, because I think it is really valuable.
I did. How many days did I do? I think I did 20 or 26 days straight originally of this cold water when I first figured out that, hey, this might actually be something. You see it all the time. You think, oh, yeah, it's not for me. It's pretty, you know, pretty confronting, straight cold shower. Long story short, I'm waiting for the weather to warm up and I'll get back into it. Yeah. Can we talk, this is a crucial pivoting point. Can we talk about, the contract for FC Fleury and being able to step across to France? Can we talk about that point in time for you? I was fortunate enough to meet you in that process and do some work with you. But from a human perspective, how did that make you feel, knowing that you're about to sign a contract on the other side of the world? And talk us through that process if you're able to.
Oh, it's a big process. It's, there's just so many emotions, thoughts, feelings around such a big move. And I think, you know, with where things were at the time that I was in negotiations for this contract, the world still is in such a, you know, a crazy place. And I went from winning a championship with Melbourne City to us being in lockdown. And it was a very challenging time in my career. And so to try and find a contract throughout that time and an opportunity and knowing that it was going to take me so far away was difficult, but exciting and thrilling and tough all at once. So that process leading into getting the contract was unbelievable. If it wasn't for COVID and wasn't for that time, I may never have, you know, come across you and met with you and trained with you. So it's just the difficulty of what that period brought about actually brought about something really special. And I was fortunate enough to get the offer and the opportunity in the middle of the year. And I knew it was the right time. I knew it was the right time for me to be challenged. I hadn't been overseas and signed a contract overseas in a number of years since my last stint, which was in South Korea, which was 3 years ago now. And the time was right. And I knew it was going to be hard. And every part of the process was difficult because I love the life that I'd built at home. I felt, I'm going to use the word comfortable, but in a way that brought the best out of me. And I loved my home life. I was fortunate enough to, you know, I'm in a really good relationship that's stable, and I had the right network. I had really good people around me. So the thought of, you know, lifting up and leaving that was really challenging, but at the same time brought about a massive element of excitement because I knew that I was about to grow and I knew I was about to experience, you know, European football, a whole new side of the world. And it was a hard decision to make in the sense that I felt like there was so much, you know, to leave behind, but also so much in front of me. But at the same time, it wasn't hard in the sense that I knew it was the right decision. And I always follow my gut. My gut has never lied to me in making the right decision in the moment. And the reason I say that is not all of my decisions have worked out well, but they've always worked out in the way they're meant to. And so I knew that no matter what came out of this experience, that I was about to really grow and really develop. And so it was a tough time going through everything happening with COVID, the lockdown, you know, not being able to be at the club and team training leading into such a big contract. But I was so fortunate to have the guidance and training with you and Dom, and it ended up being a really good build up into such a big move. And I think that I was actually really fortunate for that time, because my body coming here felt like it was on a high. It had, you know, we'd worked really hard and then we'd dropped off when it counted, and just everything was done in a way that I was actually able to arrive here feeling really ready. And I think that made the move somewhat easier, knowing that I was physically in a place of being really ready for this challenge. But in terms of mentally and emotionally, it was really tough.
I think it's one of the hardest, and thank you so much for sharing, because it is super difficult. I haven't done what you've done. I presume a lot of our audience haven't done this, but as a young footballer or footballers looking to progress, you know, this move, this contract signing, the excitement, but also detaching from loved ones and partners and, you know, your life here, to being able to actually get on a plane and move to the other side of the world to follow your dreams and do what you love. It's a huge thing. It's really phenomenal.
Yeah, and it's like little things. Like, I'd go from sitting there reading the contract, just beaming with happiness, you know, and excitement and all of these things, to quite literally 5 minutes later bursting into tears. Like, it's just, it really is, you know, you experience opposite ends of the spectrum there, and it's so exciting but so difficult. But I think that's, you know, that's a part of being a footballer, that's a part of being a professional athlete. And you know what, I understand these challenges come with other career paths, but it is definitely a big part of an athlete's life, is making, you know, really difficult decisions. And there can, you know, there's a lot of sacrifices that go into making your career the best it can possibly be. And I think it's about, you know, just knowing what you are willing to sacrifice, what you do need to be at your best. And so it's big decisions to make. And like I said, I definitely experienced both ends of the emotional roller coaster, and I still do. It doesn't end once you leave. So it's, you know, just making the best of a difficult situation, and also being really grateful and appreciative of having the opportunity to do something big.
Is there any advice you can lend to people who perhaps are overseas? And look, I'm speaking to a younger demographic, you know, people that perhaps might be away from loved ones and family and stuff for the first time. Emma, is there anything that you've felt that's, you know, really helped you or worked for you that you could share with others? Or
for me, the biggest thing has actually just been accepting and realizing that it's okay to not always be okay. And I'm not trying to give this a negative twist by any means. It's just, I'm just being real and honest that it's not always going to be a joyride. And that is actually okay, because in those moments, for me, I have learned more in those moments than I do when I'm, you know, standing up winning a trophy. And God, I would take winning a trophy any day of the week, don't get me wrong. But my point in terms of growth and development is, those difficult times and the times where you feel challenged and the times where you feel like it's not okay are just so important for your growth. And it's in those moments being like, okay, I don't feel okay. This is really hard, but what can I learn in this moment? And I think that's one of the exciting parts about going through these experiences, is you get individual growth as well as growth as a footballer. And I think for young people, it's realizing that it is more than just being a footballer. It's about, you know, being a person in the process and growing as a person in the process. So I just think it's okay to feel like that. It's normal, and you're not alone, and not everyone will get up and tell you that that is a part of it, but it is, and that's life, and just enjoying that part of the ride. And my other advice is, when things are really good, embrace it, you know, like, don't really let yourself embrace those moments, because it is hard. So when things are really good, and when, you know, things are high and you're succeeding and you're playing and things are going well, really feel those moments, because that's what we play for. You play for it to be like that. So really make sure that you're living present in those moments and just experiencing it in the best possible way you can.
Especially if you are younger, like you said, everything's in, you know, fast forward. It's all very, very quick and very busy. So actually being aware and rewarding the small wins. And yeah, I fully agree. In my coaching career, the first 5 years flew by. I didn't really reward any small wins. And now I look back and think, you know, I probably should have stopped in that moment, absorbed, you know, what's happening. Because yeah, those special moments are why we do what we do. You've got to make the most of them.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's important. It comes down to your self-talk as well. It's important to be able to be kind to yourself and give yourself credit. That's not about having an ego or being arrogant in any way. That's about, hey, I've worked bloody hard for this. And being able to sit there and actually give yourself that credit. And the other thing in that is don't seek it from others, because it won't always come. You actually have to be good enough to give it to yourself sometimes. And it's really, it's heartfelt from yourself. And don't get me wrong, we're only human to want it from those around us. And I would be lying if I said I don't want it from those around me. I do. And it feels amazing when I get it. But it also feels really good when you can sit there within yourself and be like, wow, you know, I have just given the best I can and I've succeeded and grown and developed and progressed. And I think that's a really important tool and skill to be able to utilize.
Pre-game rituals. Now, whether you can share or not share, I know there's a lot of superstition in the athleticism and athletes world. Have you got any little superstitions or pre-game rituals that you might be able to share?
Yeah, for sure. But I will probably end up branching out into a big answer for this one for you, if that's okay.
Absolutely.
I actually used to be a lot more superstitious around game day than I am now. And I'll give context actually to why. I was so superstitious to the point that if something didn't actually go to plan on game day, it was really disruptive. And I tore my ACL when I was 19, and that was my wake up to this happening, because I, on game day, the day that I tore it, I had three things that broke what I would normally do within my routine, and they were all, you know, uncontrollable moments. And that was the, in that moment, my long story short, I realized, okay, my pregame, I can be superstitious, I can plan for things to be a certain way, but I have to choose things that are only within my control, because the minute I'm dependent on things going my way with uncontrollables, I'm then actually not prepared. And so I'm not saying I tore my ACL because of those uncontrollables. It was just, I'm just saying that that was the moment that made me realize this. And so now I've got some really bizarre superstitions. Like, I always put my left boot on before my right boot, and then I do my left one up followed by my right. And I line up my shin pads so that they're at the same point on my shin, and I tape them with the same layer of, you know, a number of layers of tape, and just little things like that that sound silly, but they're, I can always control those. And even little things like the music that I listen to and things like that, I keep the same. I eat the same where I can, but also with flexibility. So I eat the same whenever I can. And then if it's not available to me, then I'm open to, you know, adjusting based on the moment. So I think that, again, a bit of advice there is pick your controllables, because you can't control everything. And for me, I found that hard to accept, because I struggle with lack of control. So that was a big learning curve for me. But now anything I can control, I do. And I believe that I've, you know, almost got a bit of a funny routine now that works.
It's so cool. I mean, every single athlete, no matter what sporting code or context, has something. You know, we've all got something. I, as a coach, even have my little rituals and routines and stuff, yeah? It's just fascinating to learn about other people's minds and what they do, whether it's the shin pads or the socks or boot lacing. You know, there's little moments here that make you unique. Thank you for sharing. Talk about the most memorable. What would be the most memorable thing upon reflection, the thing that pops to your mind to the forefront first, Emma?
Oh, for sure, my Matilda's debut. There's no, yeah, I can't answer with anything other than that.
It doesn't really get any bigger than that, does it?
that's the number one, and I will forever hold that day really close to me.
in your shoes. Yeah, I wanted to be the professional soccer player. To play for your country, to play nationally, couldn't even comprehend, you know, that opportunity. So for me, being a person that's very visual and I love hearing things and trying to feel what that would be like, you know, just envisioning this crowd, regardless if it's 5,000, 50,000, you know, just to hear that experience from you, I think it's really special. One of the worst experiences that you've unfortunately been through. I didn't really want to touch on too much of the injuries. You know, for those of you who don't know, we've got an exceptional video of Emma, and it was put together by Nick Holland. And, you know, all you guys should jump on and have a look at that video as well, where Emma discusses, you know, her career in a small snippet. It's a 5-minute video and you talk about your unfortunate injuries. But if you could share with us a negative experience, maybe the worst one that you've had to go through.
Yeah, I mean, I can't help but like already spin a positive to it before I even answer your question. I will just say the hardest experience I've gone through was tearing my ACL. But in saying that, I think it's wildly one of the best things that's actually ever happened to me. And I think what I learned through the 12 months that I was injured and rehabbing about my body and about, you know, you just learn things that you actually can't learn unless you go through that. And what I learned about myself and everything throughout that process was growth. And yes, it was, I can't even put words to the feeling of when that happened. And I will never forget the phone call of when the doctor called me to confirm that I had torn my ACL and that in 3 days' time I was going in for a knee reconstruction. I just, at that point, I couldn't fathom the thought of not playing for 12 months, but it's amazing what that journey brought about. And it was, yeah, it was an exciting time of growth. God, it was full of low points, don't get me wrong. And there were plenty of days that felt unbearable. And I would be lying if I said there weren't moments where you just think, oh my God, it would actually be easier to quit. But it's in those moments though that you realize your strength and you grow, because you know, a true champion is the one that bounces back from those feelings and thoughts. You still have them. It doesn't mean that you're not a champion. It doesn't mean you're not a professional. It's the way that you respond, for me, to those things. And for me, my response in that was I just had so much drive to be bigger and better than what I was beforehand. And I see every challenge that I'm faced with now like that. And again, in those moments, they're bloody hard and I would never sugarcoat them. But it's just having the belief in those negative or hard times that what is going to come out of it is actually going to be positive and you are going to learn and grow and, yeah, just be a better version of yourself and a bigger version of yourself.
I knew you'd be you and just spin that into a beautiful positive outcome. Seriously though, we have two options. I don't want to harp on. I won't taint anything you've just said because it was awesome. But you know, for those who work hard, Emma, for those who accept the difficulties and accept the challenge to become and bounce back, I like the wording champion, you know. It's inspiring. Like your whole story is inspiring. So we thank you very much for sharing and for your time. I'd like to finish on an even more positive. Please talk to us about winning a championship. What does it feel like?
Oh, it's unbelievable. I'm so lucky that the one I won this year was my second one. It's just, that's what we play for. You know, we want to win. Like I said, I love winning. And to get up there holding a trophy and win, that is the pinnacle. And, you know, that's like the mountaintop. That's what you're climbing for. That's what you're fighting for. That's what we play for. And, you know, you win as a team and sharing that feeling with such a special group of girls and you, it's not, you know, you win that game, but you're standing there winning, reflecting and knowing how much hard work has just gone into that. And it's a reward. And I hope to win more because it's the best feeling in the world. And I hope that I can, you know, hold a trophy like that now in the national team. That's the next big goal. And so I've had two W League championships and hopefully can add to that, but I will keep, you know, striving and aiming to add in every way because there is no better feeling than that. And, you know, I'm always aiming for that. I'm always aiming to win and I will never play a game not aiming to win because why would you play otherwise? So it's just, I don't think there's one word for that feeling. It's just incredible.
I appreciate it. for us, for the rest of us, Emma, who have not, been in that fortunate spot to be able to win a championship, not just one, but two, it's phenomenal. And to hold the trophy up. Thank you so much for sharing, for spending this time, for having this chat. I can't wait to reflect over this podcast, to do some editing and to upload and get it out to the audience. I would love to have you back on as your season progresses over there in France for round two, episode two. If you've got the time, if and when, it'd be great to have you back on.
Absolutely. I would love to do an episode two, so you can count me in.
Well, Emma, we'll hold you to that. Episode two. I'm sure we're all already looking forward to hearing more on your story and, of course, the update from being over in France with FC Fleury. Thanks so much for your time. Guys, again, we appreciate you listening and tuning in. We appreciate all the support, the likes, the comments, the shares. This episode has been brought to you by Oxidate Performance. Please drop a comment, share this with somebody. The more exposure and traction we can gain, the greater this podcast will become.